You know, so this week, something interesting. School starts for a few folks. There's a few different schools that are starting this week here in town, smaller schools, or some schools that are starting the next week. And then our public schools right now, they're starting September the 8th. And so if you have any children that are in public school, it's going to go back a little bit. However, I mean, I bet you anything, when we get close to that, that date's going to change as well. You know, this just reminds me yet again, we can't place our trust, our faith, our hope, even on our schedules, really. Because has anybody here had a calendar that has not been impacted by COVID-19 or that has not had a vacation canceled or has not had work situated be changed or has not had any of those things? And right now, parents, especially parents of younger children, they're faced with this dilemma. There's a lot of, I don't know what to do. You know, we have six children, and they're enrolled at a few different spots in town. And I know it is hard to know what's the way forward. You see, because we want our children to be blessed. We want them to be safe and happy and all of these things and have a wonderful time at school and learning. We want to show them the road to blessing, but yet we don't know what it is. What does that road look like when it comes to our children in school? Or maybe your kids are a little bit older. Maybe you have a teenager or a young adult that's a child that you've just grown distant from. You try to reach out to them, but phone calls don't get returned. Or you try to be with them and talk about them. You say, how was your day? It was fine. That there's just no connection there. You want to be blessed with your child, no matter what age they are. You want your relationship with them to be blessed. You want them to be on the road to blessing. But where is that road? What does it look like in that situation? Or maybe you're into your golden years. Maybe you're beyond. All the kids are grown and gone, and some of the grandkids are grown and gone. And you're at the point to where you start looking back on life, and you start looking at all the things that you did, and all you can feel is regret for the things that you didn't do and the time that you didn't spend. Well, does God want you to live with regret? Is that the path that he has for you? You want to be blessed. You want to walk down that road to blessing, but what does it look like in the golden years of your life? Or maybe a few years ago you were able to get a job, and a job that you love. Maybe you're working at a company and you handle the booksheets. You handle the profit and the loss. You handle all the business expenses. You handle all of this. And then when COVID happened and all the in-person stuff got shut down, you were able to keep working. You just had to work from home. And right now, maybe you go into the office one day a week or twice a week, and you pick up the expenses, you pick up the receipts, but then most of the work you can do is from the house. Well, while you're working there from home, you see the receipts that your boss has given you to reimburse him for company expenses, except for you see that there's a lot of expenses on there that you just can't reimburse. You know, maybe he took a few of the guys out from work, and they went out to go and buy drinks. They went out to go and buy a bunch of stuff that your company has a very strict policy. We don't reimburse that. And so you call them up, and you say, hey, I got these receipts. I saw the expenses, but I can't reimburse you. And he says, well, why not? I'm just trying to improve morale. You know, everybody's mad and frustrated and sad these days. I'm just trying to get the crew happy. And you say, well, I understand that. But we cannot reimburse the drinks that you bought. And in fact, now I'm required to go to HR and let them know that this is what's going on. This is the situation. And so your boss responds and he says, look, he says, either process those receipts by the end of the day or I'm going to process your termination papers, and then hangs up the phone. What do you do? You want to live in a way that honors God. You want to live out your Christian faith. But you also realize that right now, it's a really bad time to lose a job because it can be hard to find some. And this place has been a blessing to you. It's allowed you to provide a better life for your kids. It's allowed you to be more generous. You don't want to see it go away, but you want to be blessed in life. You want to walk down that road to blessing. Well, where is it in that situation? You see, each and every one of us, these are just a few examples, but we all face these kinds of tough situations where we're trying to look forward and to see, well, what's the right choice? What's the right way? Which way should I go? And sometimes those answers are clear cut. Very, very rarely are they obvious, but when they are, it's great. But far more often, there's a lot of nuance, there's a lot of tension, and there's no clear direction that we need to take. But we're reminded, God wants to bless my life. God wants to walk with me down the road to blessing. So what do we do? What does that road look like? Now, today, we're not able to answer all of those questions. I'm not able to tell you in every single situation what you should do. That's often you and the Holy Spirit navigating it together. But today, I want to share with you this. I want to share with you the foundation of those decisions. I want to share with you the big picture so that you can see from the scriptures how to walk down that road to blessing, what that road even looks like, and how to navigate that with God. And the big picture that I want you to see today is this. The road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. When we act out of fearless faith, God always, 100% of the time, blesses that. Sometimes those blessings don't look quite like what we thought they would. But we'll get to more of that in just a little bit. Now, to show you this, to illustrate this today, we're going to look at the story of a judge from the Old Testament, a rather unlikely story. And this continues our series, by the way, of unlikely heroes from the Bible. We began this last week looking at Rahab the prostitute. If you missed that, go to the website, cp-church.com. Check it out. It was a great time looking at her life. Because when we look at the lives of the people in the Bible, we get rid of any notion that we have that says, oh, well, that's just for super Christians. Or, I'm glad that King David, with all of his riches and all of his wealth, I'm glad he could do wonderful things for God. But I don't have any of that. In fact, my life's pretty messed up. There's nothing that God can do in me. But when we look at the people that God worked through and did amazing things, people that the Bible holds up as examples of faith, we see that they all had rough edges. We see that they're all broken and messed up, just like we are today. And then we could be encouraged because we know God did wonderful things through them. I wonder what kind of wonderful things he's going to do through me. And so today we're going to look at a story in the book of Judges. Now, Judges, if you've ever read Judges, it follows a cycle. It kind of goes through the same refrain throughout the book. And Judges, it represents a rather dark time in Israel's history. In fact, I read somewhere they added up the amount of deaths that occurred in different battles. The Bible gives us numbers, not for all of them, but for some of them. And it was right around 250,000 people died in battles in this book alone. And you read that and you think, where is God? What is going on here? Now, before we dismiss that time as being barbaric and out of touch, just remember, the bloodiest century on record when it comes to warfare was just this past century. You see, their time, it's not much different than our time. Now, the cycles that I told you about that the Israelites went through, it looks something like this. They would follow God for a little while, and then they would start to drift away from God. They would start to turn to other gods in the areas. They start to forget about God. And so God, out of a desire to remind them and a desire to bring them back into him, it would say over and over again that God would give them over to the hand of a neighboring nation. They would come in, take over the land, and they would oppress the people. And then after a period of years, the people would cry out to God, and they would repent, and they would say, God, save us, deliver us, bring us salvation. And God would raise up what they called a judge. Now, this judge was someone who would settle disputes. That's often what we think about judges. But they were also a military leader, someone that would bring about deliverance for the people of Israel. And then once they delivered them from this nation that had oppressed them, they would live well with God, typically until that judge died. And then over time, they would start to drift away from God yet again. And the cycle repeats itself over and over again. And we're going to see that today. If you have your Bibles, open them up to Judges chapter 4. If you don't have them, they'll appear on the screen here in just a little bit. But I want to introduce you to really a motley crew here. The people that when you see their lives, you're going to think, well, what in the world can God do with them? And we're going to see the wonderful things that God did. Judges chapter 4. Look at verse 1. It says this. It says, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, now that Ehud was dead. Ehud was the previous judge that delivered them. Verse 2, so the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. Sisera, the commander of his army, was based in Harosheth Hagoyim. Because he had 900 chariots fitted with iron and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years, they cried to the Lord for help. You know, right off the bat in verse 1, it says, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. You know, we could spend all day on that phrase right there. Do you know that God always has his eyes on you? Do you know God never leaves you? He never forsakes you. It's not that he looks at you and smiles when you're doing well, but then when we mess up, he turns away from us and he hopes that we get it figured out. No, God is always with us. He never leaves his children. Now that'll preach right there, and that'll preach a different day. That's a message for another day. But get blown away from that. Even when Israel was falling short, God never took his eyes off of them. Look at verse 4. Now Deborah, a prophet, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at that time. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the Israelites went up to her to have their disputes decided. Now, as an aside, we're going to read a lot of Old Testament Bible names today. And many of them we don't know how to pronounce. Oftentimes you hear people reading them and then they stop for a minute and they just kind of guess at it. Word of wisdom, this is how you do it. Are you ready? Make something up and run with it. I bet you as I'm reading these things and just going through it, several of y'all were thinking, well, I didn't know that's how you said it. Well, be encouraged. I don't know either. So it's okay. Just make up a pronunciation and run with it. You'll impress everybody around you. But this is where we're meeting our first person in this motley crew. This is Deborah, the most unlikely of judges. And what made her unlikely was the simple fact that she's a woman. Remember, this is a patriarchal society. Men were expected to be in positions of leadership. The stereotype, the custom, the model of the day was that men would go out and lead and they would sit in the gate and they would do the government. While the women took care of the family, took care of things around the house, they would work hard, don't get me wrong. But to see a woman as a judge, that was a radical thing in the day. In fact, she's the only female judge in the history of Israel at this time that we have listed. And the author here, he wants to make sure that we understand this, that this is a crazy thing going on. If you look at verse 4, it says, now Deborah, a prophet, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at that time. She held court. If you were to read that in the Hebrew, in the original language, and do a literal translation, it would look something like this. It would say, Deborah, a woman, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, which is a feminine ending to a name, she judged Israel. The author says in this one little sentence seven times that Deborah is a woman. They want us to understand that this is one of the most unlikely of judges because she had assumed this role and she was in the role and people came to her to settle disputes. Now, sometimes I hear when people talk about Deborah, they would say, well, she just helped them decide these things. She helped them sit and judge like a judge does today. But she didn't have any leadership abilities or any leadership roles beyond that. That's just simply not true. Look at verse 6. Deborah sent for Barak, son of Abinoam, from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, the Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go and take 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun and lead them up to Mount Tabor. I will lead Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands. Deborah is sending, and she is telling Barak what he is to do. She's speaking for God. Look at verse 8. But Barak said to her, if you, Deborah, if you go with me, then I will go. But if you don't go with me, I won't go. Verse 9, certainly I will go with you, said Deborah. But because of the course that you are taking, the honor will not be yours. The blessing that is here will not be yours. For the Lord will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman. So Deborah went with Barak to Kadesh. You know, something else about Deborah that's interesting. When it says back in verse 5, and my translation says she held court, some of yours might say that she judged Israel at that time. That the word there, the Hebrew word that's used, was only used of one other character in the Old Testament, one other person, Moses himself. Deborah and Moses are the only people throughout the entire Old Testament that are described as having judged Israel in this way. That's a big deal, church. That's a really big deal. And so Deborah tells Barak, she says, look, the Canaanites, they've been oppressing us for 20 years. Many of our people don't even remember a time when the Canaanites weren't here. She says, this is the road to blessing. This is the road to freedom from that oppression. Go and take it. Raise up a people and go after the Canaanites. And Barak, he looked down this road to blessing, but you know the only thing he saw were 900 chariots of iron. Now, before we beat up Barak and get upset with him, that's a big deal. The chariots in the ancient world, I mean, infantry, normal people standing up going to fight, they stood no chance against the chariot. And the Israelites at that time, they didn't have an army to speak of. The Canaanites would have taken care of that. They didn't have weapons that would be considered normal for the time for an army to have, sword and spear and shield, because the Canaanites would have removed all of that. The only things that they could use to arm themselves with was whatever they had around the house, farming equipment. And Barak knows this, and he hears Deborah saying, you want me to take these guys, these untrained people, with whatever they have around the house, and you want me to go and take on a much greater, much superior army. And you say we'll have deliverance if we do so. Barak says, I don't see that. I don't see the blessing in this road. And so he says, Deborah, I'll tell you what, if you come with me, why did he ask Deborah to go? Probably because she spoke for God. Having her presence there was as if having a divine connection with God himself. If you go with me, then I will go. You see, Barak, this military general, who is renowned for his warfighting abilities and also is renowned for his faith, if you look elsewhere in the Bible in Hebrews chapter 11. And so right now, this is just a low moment, I think, in his life. He had other things that went very, very well and had great faith that are just not recorded for us right here. But Barak, this military general that's scared to fight a battle, takes the most unlikely of judges to go forth and to find out the blessing that waits on this road. Because remember, the road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. And since Barak didn't show fearless faith, Deborah's already warned him, the blessing won't be yours. It's going to someone else. Now, to fast forward a little bit, Barak, he puts out the call, and 10,000 men respond. 10,000 men heard Barak, and they respected him, and they knew him enough to come and to fight for him. They knew they were going up against an army far superior than what they had. But they knew, if Barak is there, then I will be there. And so 10,000 men, they start to gather together. Old Sisera, he hears about this, and he's not going to let a rebellion start. He's not going to let this enemy army just form up. And so he calls out his whole army, chariots and everything, and they start to pursue Barak. They start to go after him, to attack him, and to wipe out this force. And Barak's people, they can look down in the plains, and they can see that Sisera has these chariots. That makes him king of the plains. There's nothing they can do. But then Deborah speaks up again. Look at verse 14. Then, as Sisera is coming out, then Deborah said to Barak, "Go, this is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone ahead of you?" Twice she says, God's going to fight this battle for you. So Barak went down Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And at Barak's advance, the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and army by the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled on foot. What Deborah had spoken had came to pass. God is going to fight for you. What Deborah's saying, when we show fearless faith in God, it always leads to blessing. He always fights for us. He never leaves us unprotected or all alone. Sometimes that blessing just doesn't look like what we thought it would. Now, if this story isn't strange enough, this is where it starts to get really strange, right? Bear with me here for just a moment. Sisera, and if you know the story, you know where I'm going. Sisera got down from his chariot, and he starts to run. He starts to flee. He's trying to get back to his homeland, and likely to explain to the king what happened, present his side of the battle first, and then hopefully raise up an army and come back and regain his honor that he lost when he lost his battle. And so Sisera, as he's fleeing, he comes upon this house, this tent that belongs to Jael and her husband. Now, Jael is a woman just living at home. Her husband was at peace with Sisera. They had an agreement. And so Sisera turns in there, and he says, I'll be protected here. He goes inside her tent, which went against all kinds of customs of the day. He asks for water, and she shows him great kindness. She brings him milk. She brings him food. She comforts him. She hides him in the back. And he says, if anybody comes looking for me, tell them I'm not here. And she says, I'll stand by the door. I've got you covered. And so Sisera, being exhausted from this battle, he goes to sleep. The body can only handle so much. Look at verse 21 with me. This is where Jael does something that it's hard to know what to do with, to be quite honest. It's hard to know how to navigate this. Verse 21. But Jael, Heber's wife, picked up a tent peg and a hammer and went quietly to Sisera while he lay fast asleep, exhausted. She drove the peg through his temple into the ground, and he died. Did you see that? Did you hear what I just read? She drove the peg through his temple. While this guy was sleeping, she took a spike and nailed him to the floor. What do you do with that? Your first thought should be, well, wait a minute. Jesus says, love our enemies. What do you do with that? It might be a little bit late for that. See, we have to put ourselves in Jael's shoes and remember that she has this mighty warrior. Sisera was not a weak man. The only way you come to be a commander is if you've shown your abilities to fight and to win on the battlefield. And so she has this very strong, very violent man who also, if you keep reading, you'll see that he has a reputation of helping himself to the women of the land, if you understand what I'm saying. Come into her tent, exhausted, likely on his way to go and to raise another army, come back. And by the way, it's important to know, too, that Jael was related to Moses, that Jael's family was related to Moses' family. There's a connection there. And so Jael sees this man that's been oppressing her related people, her kinfolk, and he's getting ready to leave and come back and do it again. And so she decides, you know what? I see a hammer. I see a tent peg. She says, I'm just going to take care of this right now. Now, if you read church history, which I hope you don't because I hope you have better things to do. I read a lot of it because I enjoy it. You'll see that commentators all throughout the ages, theologians, they didn't know what to do with Jael. The most common thing you'll read about Jael is that she is condemned by people because she violated the rules of hospitality. You think I made that up, don't you? You can read all these long articles that talk about the hospitality customs of the day and how jail violated each one of them. And she's not a person to be emulated. She's not a person that should be considered blessed. Of course, they forget who Sisera is and what Sisera has done. In fact, I did see this, and I thought about bringing it, but I didn't. Maybe I should have. But there's paintings that the medieval artists did of jail. And in there you see that she has the hammer, and she has the tent spike, and here's Sisera laying on the ground. But jail, because they didn't really know what to do with her, she's just got a calm, sweet smile. Because she's a loving, nurturing woman. And she's raising the hammer. Maybe I should have brought that. I didn't. But let's see how Deborah describes jail. You see, that's chapter 4. In chapter 5, the whole chapter is this beautiful song that Deborah the judge puts together to celebrate what God has done and to celebrate this freedom and deliverance that they have found. Look at chapter 5 and verse 24. And this is the song that Deborah sings. She says, "Most blessed of women be Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. Most blessed of tent-dwelling women." She's saying that Jael got that blessing. Verse 26, "Sisera asked for water, and she gave him milk. And a bowl fit for nobles, she brought him curdled milk. Her hand reached for the tent peg, her right hand for the workman's hammer. She struck Sisera, she crushed his head, she shattered and pierced his temple. At her feet he sank, he fell, and there he lay. At her feet he sank, he fell. Where he sank, there he fell, dead." Put that to some music. Why in the world is this story in the Bible? You know, I've heard it said from people outside of church, of people who are outside the faith, who don't follow God, that one of the reasons why they don't follow God is because when they look at the Bible, they see that it's full of fairy tales that don't have anything to do with real life. They've never read Judges chapter 4. There's no fairy tale there. Why is this story in the Bible? Well, first of all, because it's real, because it actually happened. You see, it's in the Bible because it's true. We could take comfort in that. But second, it's here because God's trying to teach us something. God's trying to show us something through this story. God sees that we want to live lives of blessing. He tells us to pursue the blessing. He tells us where to find the blessing in Jesus. But he also wants us to know that the road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. You see, Barak, he was given the opportunity to have the blessing, but he didn't show fearless faith, and so he lost it. You see, he didn't get the blessing of leading. Deborah got that. He didn't get the blessing of winning the battle. God got that. He didn't get the blessing of vanquishing this enemy leader, of taking him down. Jael got that. The road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. Now, let me clarify something here, and I should have done this up front. When I say fearless faith, I don't mean careless faith. I don't mean unwise faith. Fearless faith is wise. It's grounded in truth. You see, if you decide that I'm going to have fearless faith in God today, you decide I'm going to go driving down I-70 and I'm going to go 120 miles an hour, and the whole time I'll be singing "Jesus, Take the Wheel," it's not going to end well for you. That's not fearless faith. That's many other things that we can't say in church. That's careless faith. We'll call it that. But what does fearless faith look like today? What does fearless faith look like for parents who are trying to decide what to do with their kids for school this year? What's the best and safest option for them? Well, fearless faith would look like this. It would say, make your decision, whatever it is, make your decision based on wisdom, not fear. Don't be overwhelmed and consumed by fear. Instead, seek God. And whatever decision you come to, run with it. And be ready, because as the weeks go and as the months go into the school year, the plans are going to change. But that's okay. We can handle change. We can handle new. Because we remember the road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. What does it look like for that parent or that grandparent that's feeling distant from their son, their daughter, teenager, or early 20s? Well, it might look like this, just simply reaching out to them. If they're still living at home, going into their world. If they're interested in football, you learn about football and talk about it. If they're interested in video games, you pick up a controller and you try your best. That we get rid of this fear that we may have of looking silly or of messing up. Be encouraged. You're going to do both anyways. But of connecting with that person, of that child, doing all you can. Because the road to blessing in that relationship, it's paved with fearless faith. What does it look like for that person in their golden years who, as they look back on their life, all they feel and all they see is regret after regret? I should have done this. I should have been a better dad. I should have been a better friend. I should have started that business that I was always too scared to do. Well, it's remembering God's not done with you yet. God has a purpose for every single one of us. And God has a purpose for you. And so fearless faith looks like, God, what do you have for me in this season of my life? What do I have to move forward to instead of dwelling on what's behind me? Because the road to blessing, it's paved with fearless faith. What does fearless faith look like for our person who's just been told by their boss to either cheat the company or she's going to lose her job? Well, it could look like a few things. You see, if she sticks with her decision, she says, you know what? He wants me to lie. He wants me to cheat. I'm not willing to do that. And so you send him an email at the end of the day saying, I've packed my stuff. I'll bring the office supplies back tomorrow and drop them off. This is my notice of resignation. Now, maybe he sees that and maybe he's impressed with this person's integrity and willingness to stand up for truth. And so he just responds back and says, never mind, I don't want to go with any of that. Don't worry about those receipts, I'll take care of them. But then a few months later, when he starts to see his marriage fall apart, he remembers that person stands for truth. I can reach out to her. And so you get a phone call just saying, I need help. Can you pray for me? Can you help me? That could be the blessing in that situation. Maybe she does send that email and she resigns from her job. And the response is, good, we'll see you around. And so the next day she's sitting around the breakfast table still in her pajamas drinking coffee. And she's looking at the newspaper. She's looking at Help Wanted. She's on Google looking at different things. And her son comes downstairs, her 10-year-old son, knowing that usually mom's gone by now. So he says, Mom, what are you doing? And she says, well, son, she says, I don't have my job anymore. And he says, well, what happened? What'd you do? And she says, well, I decided that I wasn't going to cheat and I wasn't going to lie. And I got fired for it. And so you see her, she sees her son start to get worried, and she says, but don't worry. She says, God's got this. She says, right now I'm just looking for a new job, and we'll find the one that works best for us. And so as most 10 and 11-year-olds would do in that situation, they go, all right, and just kind of walks off. But the next week at youth, he can't stop thinking about that moment. And he makes a decision. He decides, you know what? If all of this God stuff, if all of this church stuff, if it means so much to my mom that she's willing to lose her job over it, it must be pretty important. And so he makes a commitment to follow Jesus that day because of what he saw in his mom. I promise you that there is not a parent around today who wouldn't see that as a much greater blessing than any job could bring. The road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. Now, what I want us to do, I want you to put your Bibles down. Worship team, come on back up here. You see, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to think. I want you to look at your own life right now. I've given a few different examples of where fearless faith is needed and what it could look like. But right now, only you really know your own situation. I can't speak to that because I don't know it. But I want you to put in front of your eyes right now, what's this tough dilemma that you're facing? Maybe you are struggling and you're agonizing over this whole idea of school this year and you don't know what to do with your kids. Is it safe to send them to school or do I need to stay home with them? But I can't stay home because I have a job. Should I quit my job to be with my kids? What do I do? Put that situation in front of you. Or maybe there's a big fight going on between you and your wife. And no matter what you do, you just feel like you can't come together. You feel like there's no peace there anymore. Put that situation right in front of your eyes. Or maybe you're having a struggle at work or a struggle with your in-laws or a struggle with your neighbors or whatever it is. Put that situation right in front of your eyes. And I want you to ask yourself this question and ask God this question. And I'm going to give you a moment just to seek God with it. God, you've said that the road to blessing is paved with fearless faith. Well, God, I want fearless faith in this situation right now. I want fearless faith in my life and in my heart. But what does that look like? What does that look like right here, God? I want to give us just a minute just to ponder and pray and ask God that. So I want to ask everybody to sit quietly. I'll stand quietly and seek God.